So good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Meet Editors plenary event at the FRPRCS 17 Symposium. So as researchers, our work usually culminates by publishing our research in a paper, or also we are here in this symposium presenting all our research. So today we are joined by a distinguished panel of editors to discuss the editorial and the peer review process and share their perspectives on publishing in our field. So our format today will be highly interactive, hopefully. So I would like you, first of all, we will start with an introduction, and all the editors will give some remarks. And afterwards, I want you to ask questions, okay? And try to have this Meet of the Editor session as much like as interactive as possible, and try to have a live discussion regarding this topic. So let us begin by welcoming our panel. Joining us today are Professor Hani Nassif, Associate Editor of Construction and Building Materials. Then we have Professor Fabio Mata, Editor-in-Chief of the Journal of Composites for Construction. Then on behalf of Professor Giovanni Plizzari, who has a last-minute commitment and who was not able to attend the symposium, we have Professor Christian Carloni. And also here in the room, we have Tommaso Dantino. Both are Associate Editors of Materials and Structures. Then we have Professor Luc Tarwe, Editor-in-Chief of Structural Concrete of the FIB. Then Professor Carlos Thomas, Editor-in-Chief of the Journal of Building Engineering. And then finally, Professor Tao Yu, Editor-in-Chief of Advances in Structural Engineering. So we will begin with initial remarks, and I would like to invite all the editors, starting with Professor Hani Nassif, to share their initial thoughts. So you have like 3 to 5 minutes to do some introduction.
That's okay. Thank you. Thank you for the introduction and for inviting us to be in this session. My name is Hani Nassif, and I've been with the construction building material for about 10 years. And I'm here on behalf of the editorial, Jose Adam, who's the chief editor, could not make it. I'm one of the 12 senior editors. We have about 50 editors. The journal receives a huge number of publication. Last year, we had exceeded about 25,000 paper. And the handling of the papers is done through the editors. The editors have kind of autonomous decision to make a decision on the papers. We get topics that are very wide, broad, since the title is construction and building materials. We get a lot of papers on many subjects. We try to confine the scope of the paper to about material that can help for construction. So in other words, putting a paper together only on testing without any reference to how is that going to be an application, usually we consider it to be out of scope. So and we maybe will talk about this later, but because we are getting more and more papers, our policy is that we're going to do a lot of desk rejection based on which paper are confined to the scope of work. So number one rejection is about out of scope. And many authors, they seem to be kind of disappointed in that regard. And they say, well, I'm testing material and your journal is about material, but it's a wide range. And so yes, maybe 5 years ago or 10 years ago when the number of papers was lower, this would have been part of the scope. But now that we have more papers, we are looking really to have innovative papers, not just testing. You have to testing, but you have to find out what is the niche. Why are you doing that testing? it has, if especially now with the machine learning and with the AI, we are receiving a lot of papers, but we prefer, you know, if you want to use the AI or the machine learning, you have to have some experimental data under your own supervision. Collecting data from published material from different journals and putting them together and trying to get your modeling to go might not be reliable. So a lot of papers are rejected because the authors do not have their own testing material. If you want to do a modeling using AI, the least we could expect is that you already have done your own testing and included in that. So this is a lot of point. We have also some, there's no impact. You know, what you are doing, what you are presenting in the paper have been published over and over before. And we have the ability to review and look at previous paper, what has been published. So we call it, you know, insufficient impact. I'm putting them in order how we, you know, the rejection. So the journal encourages, especially young researcher, don't rush the paper. Don't try to, you know, put the game of like, I need to publish it quick. That's very understood. But work on the paper, make it publishable. Don't put figures with missing numbers or they are, make sure the PDF, everything is done correctly. Make sure you have a niche. What is your angle? What's the, distinguishes you from other regular paper? You know, you need to bridge the gap. Where is the gap in the research? Why are you doing this? So the raison d'etre for doing the paper is more critical than the results. You have to show that this paper will be valuable and it relates to the scope of work and that there is novelty in the paper. So I think we will talk more about this, but I think we are really accommodating. I mean, we have a way for the authors to vent if there is any decision they're not happy with. We have a mechanism. We have a lot of control on the ethics. You cannot change authors after they are, the paper was accepted. We got a lot of papers where, you know, we want to add authors. That's, we consider that unethical, in other words. Unless there is a reason, you can petition that, but there is no reason for a group of authors to add authors after the paper was accepted. We don't, we really frown on that because we've seen that as a practice to add authors and do favors to other ones. So there are many things that, you know, we can maybe talk about, but I'm happy to be here. And we encourage everybody to submit their papers. If you get rejected based on any of the reasons, please follow up. You could do that. There is a way Elsevier has put an author correspondence. It's easy to follow up and respond with your comments. Why do you agree? And we can take it. We have many cases like that, and sometimes we reverse the decision. But most of the time, the rejection is based on a basis.
So thank you very much for the advices, also for the PhD students and young researchers, because it's quite important when you are starting publishing, knowing things like this. No? So we'll move the floor to Professor Fabio Matta.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Fabio Matta. I'm the editor-in-chief of the Journal of Composites for Construction. It's published by the American Society of Civil Engineers in co-sponsorship with the International Institute for FRP in Construction, whose presence is well reflected in the board, so in terms of associate editors, in terms of board members, and in terms of peer reviewers. As far as the topics that we cover, by and large, FRP systems, so continuous fibers with a variety of matrices, be it polymeric, biopolymeric as well, cementitious. We focus on structures, and broadly speaking, our interest is in contributions that advance the state of the art and or the state of the practice. And I care very much about pointing out the state of the practice. The FRP area, or in general also the FRCM, or whatever other acronyms we wish to use, is fairly mature. So it is very much of interest for our audience to see lessons learned from field applications, for example, hence the presence of a format of papers which is called case studies. And frankly, I would like to see more of this experienced published in the journals, or submitted to the journal, perhaps. In addition to this, something that along these lines I think is valuable, is precious, is contributions that advance revisions, so codes. Whatever is missing in the codes, whatever advances can happen, whatever ideas are around in that direction, as well as ideas that are already contributed in changing and advancing codes. And this is very important for obvious reasons. I don't want to get too long at this stage. I'm sure that we'll have plenty instances, plenty opportunities to elaborate on this through the questions. I'm going to give the floor to my colleague and friend here, Christian.
Thank you so much. So I fully agree with, it will be really interesting to have case studies published, no? And also to have some advances for codes and guidelines for the future, because they are really needed in order to have more applications and to move on. No? So thank you so much, and let's move to Associate Professor Carloni.
Thank you, Eva. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Christian Carloni, and I'm representing Professor Plizzari, who could not be here, as one of the associate editors, and Professor Dantino is actually right here, who's another associate editor. Just a few comments in general on the publication and submissions. We have seen an increase in paper submissions. Right now, we are on the trend of almost 400 papers per month. There are a lot of rejections from the editors because they are not within the scope, as similar to construction and building engineers. We also tend to not consider a very suitable paper for the journal if it's just a state of the art. So if you are just compiling results from other papers and there is really no advancement, state of the art is not what materials and structure is looking for. So probably not the ideal venue for just a state of the art. There is, of course, a lot of discussion about AI. Now, of course, it's obvious we're not accepting AI papers, and we are trying actually to crank up the check on that. Just an example, a paper not long time ago was actually retracted because six references were actually hallucinated from AI, did not exist. So just do not use AI if you're looking to prepare a paper, and also review. The other point is it's very important we count on reviewers. And we're hoping to have reviewers a little bit more responsive and try to shorten the time. So while the system gives you 10 days to accept a review, if you cannot review, just decline the review. It's totally fine. Not everybody can review everything every day. So it's better to just decline right away rather than let the system decline you the review automatically in 10 days, because you're wasting 10 days for a researcher, maybe a young researcher who would like to publish. So yeah, we encourage to decline if you cannot, and if possible, even suggest somebody in your group who can potentially review the paper. That would be very important.
So thank you so much, Christian. I think that later on we will raise the hot topic of the AI and publishing. So. Good remarks, yeah. So now I will invite Professor Taiwe to share their thoughts.
Okay, thank you for for inviting me. My name is Luc Taiwe. I'm an emeritus professor at Ghent University in concrete structure. And I can also mention that the second conference in this series took place in Ghent in 1995 already, so I'm surprised it's that a long time ago, but I see many friends from those days here also in the audience. So, but I'm sitting here because I'm editor-in-chief of Structural Concrete, So Structural Concrete is the journal of FIB, International Federation for Structural Concrete, and is published by Wiley. We exist now 27 years already, and our impact factor is now 3.4. It steadily increases still. But as my colleagues already said, we see a sharp increase still in submissions. Last year we had 1,800 submissions, which is less than other journals, but okay, for us it's an increase. And about 500 papers were published last year. This comes to an acceptance rate of 28%. Sometimes it's papers are rejected without review, and then, of course, also papers after review. So besides me, we also have a deputy editor-in-chief and 8 associate editors. So the journal deals both with material aspects and structural aspects. But we see that in recent years, we have more than 50% papers related to materials as such. But there is a whole evolution regarding concrete, of course. So we see this increase. Sometimes I also have the impression that we receive papers that have at other places been rejected or not, it can be. But also, as mentioned before, papers out of scope, although, yes, it's concrete, so it's sometimes difficult to say it's out of scope without having some complaints. But one of the main problems, and I think that's for every journal, is to find good reviewers. Good reviewers who make a timely review and does not take months and months and months. But this is becoming more and more a basic problem, I think, because most people, some people can do reviews for 7 days a week. I think they have so many invitations. So we have to look for younger people who have enough experience to make a suitable review. And also, yes, if there are rejections, yes, sometimes there are complaints and so on. We cannot avoid that, but if we can justify it, it's not a problem. And one of the main reasons also, except for out of scope for rejection, is a lack of innovation, let's say originality. Sometimes papers are submitted with just adding, let's say, something, steel fibers, concrete, they make 6 tests, but we did that many years ago, or the same for FRP, for instance, people that replace some steel bars by FRP bars with this type of research we did 30 years ago. So, but for some people it's new, and in some regions it can be new, but in fact we are dealing with an international journal. So, and regarding practical aspects, we also encourage papers related to practical projects. And we have a special category of papers we call the short project notes. And they are just like 2-3 printed pages. And in this way we try to encourage contractors, designers, and so on to publish something. 3 printed papers is not that much, so we have the figures, we have the photos, and so on. So there's not so much text, but still, it's very difficult to have these people motivated to publish even that short note. And AI, yes, we can discuss a long time on AI, I guess. Authors have to make a disclosure about the use of AI. But okay, that's what they declare, of course. But nowadays there are also tools available that indicate us what is the likelihood that, in fact, the paper has been generated by AI. Of course, you cannot be sure, like plagiarism. Yes, that just literally taken over text. But AI is more difficult, and I think that's the main challenge we are faced with in the future, and that we just have what they call paper mill, are papers that are just fake or generated, you have to pay for it, and so on. How can we distinguish this? How can reviewers evaluate that? So I think that's the main challenge. So, having said this,
thank you so much. So we'll move to our fifth panelist, Professor Thomas from the Journal of Building Engineering.
Good afternoon. I want to start with a question. Do you know what is the number of papers that we receive this year, 2026, in the Journal of Building Engineering? The number? 4 years ago, when I was associate editor in the journal, we received this year around 3,000 papers. Today, I checked it, and today we have 12,000, today, in July. So we expect to have 30,000 submissions in the journal. So this question is very important to understand what I want to say now. I have some notes for thinking in the researchers, young researchers, PhD students, about how to publish in the Journal of Building Engineering and how to publish in other journals. JOBE, Journal of Building Engineering, is a Q1 journal in which we publish papers related with the building engineering. This is very important because, again, around 20% of the papers that we receive, they are out of the scope of the journal. This is very important to have it into account. The first message that I want to show you is the importance of choosing the best journal. Many good papers in any journal, I think, they are rejected because they are out of the scope, but they are good papers. So try it for the young researchers. Try to choose the best journal. You have to check what is the scope of the journal, check the web page of the journal, and check what are the papers that they are recently published. If you want to publish in the Journal of Building Engineering, you have to focus your research on the building engineering. We receive a lot of good papers related on materials, good papers where the researcher developed a new material, a new concrete, a new binder, combinations, components, and so, but they don't focus on the benefits, on the limits that they have on the journal, building engineering. So if you have a materials research, you have to send this paper to a materials journal, not to the Journal of Building Engineering. This is the first thing that I want to tell you. The second idea is the quality of the paper. Today is not important the number for the young researcher. It's better to have between 5 to 10 good papers, good quality papers, than 100 poor papers. This is very important. And why? Because the number of papers that we receive, the number of submissions that we receive is huge. So your paper should be the best paper you can. So try to spend time with your research, with your paper, and try to do the best. This is the second idea. The third message that I want to share with you is that focus on the title and the abstract. This is a tip. Why? Because sometimes you prepare a very good paper with the methodology, results, analysis, and conclusions, but you write the title and the abstract at the end. And at the end, you have rush to publish it. You want to publish immediately. And the question here is that you don't spend time in the abstract. Take into account that the abstract is the first thing that we, the editors, the reviewer, and the potential reader, is the first thing that they see. So it's very important to focus on the abstract. Something that I say to my research students is to write and try to. You need to try to make the editor want more. One more. Focus on the impact of your paper, but also say something to the people reading that want to read more of your paper. And finally, about the artificial intelligence.
Yes? Oh, sorry. Should I start from the beginning? Or no. Okay, I finish with that. Yeah, I can hear me now. Okay. Yeah, about the artificial intelligence, this is a good point, a very important point. I think the artificial intelligence will transform the scientific publishing a lot. The artificial intelligence will help us for writing, to make comparisons, to check, but it is necessary to have researchers controlling that. This is very important. Now, probably in a few years, in 5, 10 years, the artificial intelligence is going to be is going to make everything in a research, probably. I remember last week we were in a laboratory sessions, some researchers, and we were analyzing microstructures in the microscope. And after 2 hours analyzing the microstructures and the composition of the material, I asked the other colleagues, what is the thing, what thing should the artificial intelligence cannot do of the 2 hours we were working together? And the only answer we found was putting the sample inside the microscope. This is the only thing that artificial intelligence cannot do. So this is a very powerful tool. We can use that, and is the idea of the artificial intelligence, in my point of view, is a very important tool to increase the productivity, to increase the production of our research. But every time it's necessary to have a researcher controlling that. Thank you.
So to finish with this first round, we will move the floor to Professor Tao Yu.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Tao Yu. I'm from the Hong Kong Polytechnic University. I'm a co-editor-in-chief of the journal Advances in Structural Engineering, published by SAGE. So our journal published papers across the broad field of structural engineering, including work related to analysis, design, assessment, monitoring, and retrofitting and resilience of the engineering structures. And our journal covers a wide range of construction materials and structural systems, including steel, concrete, FRP, and other emerging materials, as well as bridges, buildings, and other civil infrastructure. So we have a big editorial team, including over 10 editors and associate editors, each of whom have specific expertise to take care of several topics that I've just mentioned. So we are particularly interested in work that combines scientific rigor and practical engineering relevance. That means work not only advance analysis and model, but also address some critical challenge faced by the built environment. And in the past few years, our journal has reflected the rapid evolution of research in this field. So topics like advanced and low carbon materials, modular construction, and AI and the data-driven method, climate resilience, and life cycle assessment has become increasingly important for our journal. So overall, we welcome papers from both fundamental research and applied research, as long as the paper offers new insights and all provide new solutions to address the engineering challenge, or demonstrate methodological innovation, that would be fine. So all these kind of papers are welcome. Thank you.
So thank you so much for your introductory remarks. Also, I think that all the scopes of the different journals were really clear, probably to the audience. So right now we know maybe where can we start publishing. And right now, I think that we can move the floor to our audience. and we will open the dialogue. So I would like you, if you would like to ask a question that someone there is raising their hand, I'm going to suggest you to raise your hand to introduce yourself and your institution and then state your question. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman. My name is Riyad Al-Mahedi. I'm from Swinburne University of Technology in Melbourne, Australia. I would like to pose this question to the editors of how you can work with the publishers to help us and help our students. And I'm talking here about copyright issues. So for example, when you publish in a journal, your own diagram, your own work, when you want to publish it under a different context or within the same context in another journal, but you know, expanded topic, other topics, you have to either ask for permission of the original journal, and sometimes they ask you to pay money to authorize you to use that. And sometimes we have to redraw, it's the same picture of the testing setup. You have to redraw it in order to justify using it in another journal. So I think it's really important that if we can, if the editors can work with the publishers to help alleviate this problem, to grant this permission, because it is, you know, the same author, and provided that author cites that published work. And I'm really specifically talking about your own published work, your own data, your own pictures, your own diagrams. Thank you for that.
Who would like to answer?
That's a good question. I think it doesn't come that often, but we had situations because of copyrights. I think this is something that the publisher is really keen on, because they might have, if they don't do the proper circulation of this, you might end up having some legal issues. If you don't get the rights to publish again, even though you are the same author, but it might have been published, you're saying, the same journal, I think that makes it easier to communicate. But if it's a figure that was in another journal or with other publisher, we will ask you to get the copyrights to be able to use that. It's not that straightforward. And I believe the publishers, and I don't want to speak for Elsevier only, but I believe there has been some cases where the publishers were into legal issues. And that's why we are very stringent on getting copyrights. So when you are writing the papers, and I've had a situation where we ask the authors to try to figure out a way not to use that same figure in a way, if possible. If they say, well, I can't get the copyrights from other journal, then can you rewrite the paper in such a way that you don't rely on that figure? Or maybe reproduce it. My advice is that not to go through getting publishing rights, because that delays publication a lot. So I don't have a quick answer to what the situation you are posing, but I would advise the authors to try to be independent of other, maybe reference it, discuss it. You know, people have now access to the other papers. Try to make the paper independent of other figures of other papers, that's my quick way of fixing this. Anyone wants to?
So maybe we can move to the next question. Yeah.
Hello, this is Rudy Cirasino from NC State University. I think all of you touched on the use of AI in writers submitting papers for review. I'm curious to get your perspective on how prevalent you think the use of AI is at the other end from the reviewer's perspective. Are reviewers using AI to write and generate reviews?
Okay, I'll start quick first. We don't allow reviewers to, because their copyrights, you know, the ownership is with the author. As long as the paper is not yet published, It's owned by the author. We don't allow reviewers, and we make a statement on that that they would not, they cannot upload the paper to the ChatGPT or whatever to make the reviews. Usually, we have a way of detecting if the reviews are generated by AI in a way, and that usually we've thrown heavily on that. We don't want that to happen. That's our policy.
Same for us. No difference in this respect.
The same for structural concrete. Also, as you said, as long as it has not, the paper, the text, the submission is property of the author, so you cannot put it in the public domain, so to say. So, but okay, reviewers can use ChatGPT to have better formulations and so, but that's not related to the content.
Yep, totally agree. The review paper is losing value. It's losing value because probably the artificial intelligence is going to make it better than the researchers. But the experimental and also the analysis at this moment is more, present more value than the review paper.
So let's move to another question. First, I think it was Professor Barros.
Joaquim Barros from the University of Minho. Well, one of the problems that as a researcher that I'm facing several times is, reviewers that are, in fact, I should say, incompetent. So when we receive when we submit a paper and then we receive some comments that are totally out of scope, so this means that I don't know if the person, if reviewer, has read the paper, and we realize that they, in general, they are protected by the editor because, they are working freely, so, and consequently, what they, the recommendations that they have, despite to be completely no sense. And this is a real problem. So I think that in order to have, we need to do something in order to have a very efficient, a very helpful reviewers, which means that maybe we can, if a reviewer has make a strong reviewer, improve the quality of the paper, maybe he can have the figure of associate author of the paper, something like this. And we have obviously nowadays tools, and you have tools, that is possible to verify that this reviewer have only read the introduction and made only recommendations to head his own papers. So consequently, if this happens, this person should be in the blacklist and maybe publicly. Another point is about to decide the type of journal. Well, in several journals, in fact, they cover almost same thing. So it's difficult for a young researcher, even a senior researcher, to decide what is the best. So why not to have a common platform where we submit, a researcher submit, and then this platform advise based on the content, advise what is the best journal. So there are a lot of things that can be done, but what I realize, it's what happened nowadays is the same that happened 20 years ago. And we have a lot of please use AI. For instance, another thing, why not to use AI to find the best reviewers? And if these best reviewers, if we have the possibility to incorporate them, if they made a very good job, why not to create the figure of associate author? Sometimes I receive so wonderful reviewers that I want to invite this reviewer to be co-author of the paper. So I have other ideas, but okay. So I stay for the moment.
Yeah, thank you for your comment. I think it's you talked about different things, but I think one of the issues you mentioned about one reviewer being out of scope or making comments that are not relevant. Usually we catch that. As an editor, our responsibility is usually to read the reviews make sure that they are relevant. And at least in our journal, the reviewers are picked based on a very intelligent way. Elsevier has a broad database, and it picks, there are many ways you could pick up the reviewers. You could pick them based on the system itself, based on keywords, classification, many ways, and most of the time, it picks the right reviewers. We don't rely only on one review. We have a minimum of three reviews that to make a decision on the paper. So if one reviewer is out of context, the other two reviewers, if both concur about the rejection, then obviously the paper has to be rejected. So it's not a decision based solely on one review. And I understand the authors, they use that in responding and saying, well, how come this reviewer, and they ignore completely the other two reviews that are unanimously and concurrently saying that this is not a good paper. There are cases where the reviews are on the edge, so that we ask for more reviewers usually. That's how I do it, is that I dismiss that review and I ask for more reviews. Usually we send it out to maybe four or five reviewers, and then we get two or three, and if one of them is out of context, I try to get more reviewers before I make a decision on it. And this is what we train our editors to do. So these cases that you are mentioning are very limited, in my opinion. They're not widely occurring. You know, there might be some paper, and usually authors become very defensive. My advice, don't be defensive. Accept it, move on, revise your paper, submit it to another journal. If you want to be very defensive about it, it creates some bad taste with the editors, right? Because it goes up the chain, and then it becomes a case. We have to look at it from different ways. And then some authors are marked as blacklisted. Some reviewers are blacklisted. And we have a system that tells you, don't send for review because of the reasons you mentioned. So the system is working, and I think we are, you know, eventually we are coming to a steady state solution that the bad elements are weeded out. That's what I would say.
Do you want to add something?
Okay, very briefly, I think I agree completely with Hani. These are exceptions. I have a few years of experience as well since 2018. We have seen very, very few of these cases. And in my view, the way we address these instances is by selecting proper reviewers. Can accidents happen every now and then? Of course, it depends also what kind of accidents or how you perceive this being an accident. But as far as addressing these issues or solving these issues, this is part of the peer review process. And just as Hani was describing, when we have two or three reviewers who are competent, if there are instances where one of them might submit something that is perceived as controversial as a result of the peer review, obviously this extreme, if you will be smoothed out. And we've seen this in the journal over and over. So frankly, I don't see it as much of an issue as long as the selection of the peer reviewers is done properly by the editors, and as long as the editors do their job, meaning they critically check the reviews and follow through accordingly.
So thank you. Maybe we can move to another, or do you want to add something?
Just to add something, you have heard here the numbers of papers submission. Yes, we require at least two reviews, three. So these are thousands and thousands of reviews that need to be performed and reviewers invited. So it can happen, of course, that there is a problem. This can happen on so many reviewers. But anyhow, when there is a rejection and an acceptance, most of us, I think, invite a third reviewer. And I must say, when I started this job many years ago, I knew the reviewers personally, or I knew their background, so I could invite them like that. Nowadays, that's not possible with so many reviewers we need. But I think in this case, AI helps us in identifying, based on publications, based on other things, who is the best, the most suitable reviewer. So in this thing, in this respect, I think AI is a very good help.
Thank you. So let's move to Professor Amir.
Thank you very much. My question is related to workload of the reviewers. What level of coordination between the enormous number of editors and associate editors takes place before assigning reviewers? It's not uncommon for reviewers to receive two reviews from the same journal for two different papers within days, or at least within the review periods that's allowed. My concern is specific to two journals, could be in others, and that is engineering structures, which is not represented today, so it's an unfair question, but it's also to construction and building materials. It's not unusual, again, for us to receive two reviews for two different papers within a day or two from each other, or within a week. This issue is, I know, in the Journal of Composite for Construction is handled very well by the a certain spreadsheet that's passed along to the associate editors to avoid the excessive workload for reviewers. So Hani, if you could shed some light on this. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a good comment. So we have now in the system, when the system, if you ask the system to the Scopus to give you the background, you might get 10 reviewers. So that sometimes that's an indication that the paper is not very relevant to the audience of the paper, of the journal. But if the editor goes with those listed reviewers, when they are selecting the reviewers, they are asked not to select reviewers who have already an assignment. So we try to select reviewers who are fresh. In other words, the system will tell you if reviewer number one, let's say, has one assignment or two assignments, how recent it was, and what is the time period. And sometimes, like you said, sometimes there are very limited number of reviewers. So if the reviewer has one assignment already, and the date is within, let's say, the end of his assignment, they might have them as an alternate reviewer. And that usually, sometimes, because the other reviewers decline, then this the alternate review becomes asked to be, and although he has one assignment, then you get duplicate assignments, I mean, you know, one after the other. So that's a difficult one when there are not enough reviewers in that topic. That's a problem. But in general, I think what you are referring to, we have an option now for reviewers to say, I don't want to review anymore for this between this date and this date. I'm very busy, I have other assignments to do. So you can take yourself out as a reviewer from the pool of reviewers. The system allows that. So this way you don't have the bombarded by reviews, although they shouldn't be bombarding, the reviewers shouldn't be, because the assignments are clear. If you are being selected, it says, he doesn't have enough work in this area, or he have one paper published in this area, or he has two assignments already in this area. So the editors have to select, and they have the option to do it, at least in our journal. So I'm hoping that problem will go away shortly.
As far as ASE, we're using Editorial Manager as a platform. As an example, I've been an associate editor of another journal since 2010. Since the very beginning, as an associate editor, when one selects a potential reviewer, the associate editor can see if there is a review, a pending invitation, or if there is an ongoing review. In the JCC, for example, we follow the same approach. So the associate editors, at the time when they select potential reviewers, they have this information. So this is resolved from the beginning in this sense.
Maybe we can move to another question, over there in the right-hand side, Professor Nani or Professor Mayer.
Tony Nani, University of Miami. First of all, I wanted to thank the organizer for this round table. It's great to see the editors. By the way, you are not under trial. I think you misunderstood the question from Professor Saraceno. I think he was talking about reviewers using AI, but that's kind of a detail. And we have an example last week of three reviewers, I asked my student to check in ChatGPT identical reviews from 2 out of 3. So, but this is mechanics. I have a much broader question. There is no doubt an inflation of papers. Look at the growth of all your papers. I was an editor myself for 20 years of a journal. We cannot, and you are all academicians, you cannot expect our students to read all this stuff. Yet, as faculty members, we count this like beans. So this is a much bigger problem, and I don't have a solution. In your perspective, what can be done to bring this to, you know, under control? This bubble is going to explode. How can this be possible that we generate all this knowledge that 10 years ago was 100th of what we have today? So I think this is a community issue. And again, I don't have a solution. So maybe if you have some insight, that would be great.
Thank you very much. I think what we do on that is to change the method that we obtain professor positions, that we obtain the research projects, funding, and so. Because all around the world, all the researchers, they are trying to publish, because it's the first method to measure the quality of the researcher. And this is the main problem. If we focus on the quality, and for example, in Spain, we have nowadays something very interesting is that when you apply for a project, you send only the 10 papers, no more. In your CV, you put 10 papers, and of course, you put the 10 papers related with the proposal or related or the best, the most cited papers. And in this case, the other papers they have no value. So I think the idea to publish more quality papers than number of papers is the solution to that.
Thank you.
Well, as my colleague said, that's a consequence of the system. Promotions and so on, they are based on publications. And I think we are facing a serious problem. We just talked about AI, we will see many more applications in writing of papers just based on AI. Authors not even knowing what they have published, so to say, but still we base our evaluation system merely on publications. So there is, of course, an inflation. There is also an inflation of journals. If you look 10 years ago, when I was a young assistant, so that's already some time ago, if I read like 5 journals and I followed these 5 journals, I knew what was going on in my field all over the world, so to say. Nowadays, it's not possible to keep track. What we also see, yeah, there are subscriptions to journals and some libraries do this and so on. Before, you could just read like ACI Journal or Structural Concrete. Nowadays, we publish so many papers, you cannot keep track of it. So young researchers, they do not just stick to one journal. They go online, they look for a particular paper on a particular topic. Whether it's published in your journal, my journal, or another journal, doesn't matter. So we don't have really a group of people that adhere, let's say, to one journal. Well, not international journals, of course, you have local journals and so on. So there is, of course, a huge amount of research funding all over the world. Also, the revisers would not have papers. So when you look then to originality, that's a main topic. I cannot follow what's happening in your journal or your journal. Some people submit, your journal rejected, comes to Structural Concrete or the other way around. So I find it a very big challenge to the future, especially for young researchers to establish a career and to find original research topics and so on and so on. So I have no solution for it immediately, but it's a huge challenge.
Yeah, it's difficult, yeah. Do you want to add something?
So I completely agree that quality papers are more important than number of papers. And actually, Professor Nelly posed a question for the young researchers. They probably get confused with all this large number of papers. So what I actually tell my research students is that they could start with the high impact papers published in good journals, and they focus first on a few reputable research group first by reading those papers. But this is a problem, I guess, is a system problem, which we cannot have a single solution for that. Thank
you. So let's move to another question. Over there, there is someone with the microphone already.
Hello. Good afternoon. My name is Mohammad Sadif Rahim. I'm from NED University, Karachi, Pakistan. So my question is a very basic question, but relevant to the young researchers, that if we get major revisions, then what do you advise to a young researcher how to respond it or develop compelling response?
Yeah, major revision, then yes, you have to follow the comments of the reviewer, I would say, and you reply to it. Of course, if some review comments are not justified, you can always explain, or if you don't follow them, you can always explain. But the main issue is that you follow a decent discussion, so to say, don't start blaming each other or say that's stupid or you don't know about it and so on. So I think we should keep it at the collegial level, let's say. But in fact, review apart, well, rejection is one thing. But if it's not rejected, in fact, the main task of a reviewer is to improve the quality of the paper and make suggestions from his or her own experience in the field. So it's in a process of improvement. So we should look to it from both sides, reviewer side, author side, in this way. And I think it's a learning process, especially for young researchers. They can learn from the experienced reviewers. So I think, it's a discussion, you could say, between the author and the reviewer, but also even some papers with, let's say, famous colleagues in the field still can receive very valid reviewer comments, in fact. And it's not because it's, let's say, high-level author that there are no remarks. And so it can be beneficial from both, or it should be beneficial from both sides.
Thank you. So do you have more questions? Here? Okay, here, or you can...
Yep. So I'm Russell Gentry from Georgia Tech, and my day job is to mentor about 65 faculty in a college across many different domains as an associate dean for faculty. And I would say that we're really encouraging our faculty not to publish with very large groups of others. Young faculty should think about publishing in smaller groups instead of being one name in 20 or one name in 12. Of course, it varies by discipline. And also be very clear about their contributions to papers. In other words, if your name is on a paper, you should be very clear about what your contribution is to that paper. And don't put your name on a paper where you didn't make a substantial contribution. So as an old faculty member, I've recently removed my name from certain papers where I thought students were giving me a kindness to put me on a paper where I didn't really contribute. So these are two things. And I think the third thing is we really have to go back to the top five. I love the thing about the top five papers. We're tenuring faculty at a major, R1 university now, who are publishing fewer and fewer papers, but are passionate about their work and who claim authorship of the work. And I think as senior faculty, we should try and encourage one another to do that, because this publication mill that we're talking about, this kind of industrial production of papers as opposed to knowledge, is a real problem. And I think, there's many fantastic people who contribute in this room. And I think, frankly, coming to this conference and listening to all these talks is perhaps more valuable these days than the papers in the journal. The final thing I'll say, I know it's kind of a
it's kind of complaining, is that with AI coming and all these amazing editors in front of the room, it would be interesting to see if you could combine resources and start to identify papers that are being published over and over again with very little differences in the journals. And that might help identify practices that we're kind of struggling with, this kind of overwhelmingness of papers without a distinction to prior work. So that's all I have to offer.
Thank you so much for your advice. I don't know if you would like to comment.
Russell, I totally agree. This is kind of goes in the direction of what Tony was saying. And I'm going to answer as an author, not as an associate editor. For me, if I have to say, it takes 3 months to write a really good paper. So if you think about that, if you publish 4 or 5 papers in a year, you're already basically working every single month on a paper. When you start to see somebody publishing 20, 30 papers in a year, of course the quality, it's going down. And we should, as researchers, tell our students not to go for the 30 papers, but to have really good quality papers, because nobody's going to read them. And it's going to be just confusing to find the really good ones. So I totally agree.
So over there, there is a question. And then I know that in the back, one moment, that here there was a question.
Yeah.
And
yes. Thank you very much. The first female question voice, I think. I would like to reiterate the previous question to say a huge appreciation for all your hard work. You know, it's a unpaid service and, you know, fantastic. But just as a female, I'm just wondering, we don't see any female representation from the journals here. And, you know, I'm Sue Taylor from Queen's University Belfast. I hosted this conference in 2018. I'm the mother of a female engineer. And I thought things would have changed since she became an engineer. And I just welcome a philosophical debate on the area of gender balance and female representation, particularly as we have women in FRP tomorrow.
Who would like to answer?
Just a quick and perhaps positive feedback and perhaps critical for us. Maybe we should work on having a larger picture without editorial boards. I can speak for our journal, but I'm sure that this is fairly common. The way we organize the board is there are the editors, there are also associate editors, there are board members, and the presence of different genders is very well represented.
All genders, yeah. I mean, there's not one journal up there that's 67%. Male.
Not to mention among the reviewers.
You know, and I guess maybe it's, you know, balancing career breaks, and that does impact, but I just would like to see more representation. Thank you.
Thank you. So let's move to another question.
Yes. My name is Radwan Masmoudi from the University of Sherbrooke. I would like to thank you for all your thoughts and insight. You are doing a great job. My question is related to the heavy task to the reviewers. We receive, as researchers, a huge number of papers to review. Do you think it's a good idea for the journals and the owners of the journals, like Elsevier and so on, to start paying the reviewers? What do you think? Is it the higher standard? It will lead to higher quality of review, or the opposite?
I'm not sure what kind of incentive that would be. You know, the idea is to, you know, peer reviews are about volunteer work. And if somebody is interested in the research work and in their community, I think they would be, you know, it would be good to give a thorough review, not for the money or for, you know, compensation, but rather for making the work better and better, because they could benefit from it as a reviewer to know what's coming and what other authors are maybe building some of the work based on their work. So I don't see the idea of compensating reviewers for that part, because that's how the peer review is based upon volunteer work. And in my opinion, if the journal was to come to do that, it will be a very expensive endeavor. The journals are losing money. They're not making a lot of money. So I don't think this will be coming in the future. And I just want to make a comment about what Russell and what Tony mentioned. We do a lot of checking now about, luckily Elsevier has connected all their journals together. So we are able to find out, and we have many cases where the same paper is submitted into two different journals at the same time. And that's a blacklisted for the author right away, because we make sure to tell the authors that sign that you did not submit this paper somewhere else. And even with that, we see a lot of cases that where people are presenting in different journals. And the editors of both journals, we talk to each other and we reject it right away. That's one thing. There's another one that we are starting to apply, which is slicing their research. They would test something, they would do strength, shrinkage, and then they would have paper on the strength, the paper on the shrinkage, but half of the paper is the same. The experimental setup is the same. And a lot of the authors, they wait until one of the papers they accepted, then they send the second paper. And that we call it salami slicing of the research, and we reject it. We say no. So in other words, there are some, I mean, I have to assume all the authors are very ethical, but there are authors driven by the number of papers, and they want to make the most out of their experimental results. And that is really a making everybody look bad when that happens. So I would advise the young researchers, put all your effort, all your results, if you can, in one paper, get a very strong paper, then you can get derivatives of that paper in the future by doing incremental work. Don't try to spare this result here and that result over there, because you're going to end up not getting published anywhere. So my advice, don't salami slice your research.
I would like to move back to Radwain's question with a comment and a suggestion. Regarding the comment, the notion of the proposition of paying reviewers sounds like a wonderful incentive to increase these AI reviews, so I would stay far away from it. But we can do something about that. The community is large. Unfortunately, many of us tend to invite the same people over and over. Well, when you receive an invitation and you don't have a chance to do that, share the names of good students, good postdocs, good colleagues who could also do the job. That's how we broaden the community of potential reviewers. So be part of the solution and work with us on this.
So thank you. We have time for one question. So over there on the right-hand side.
Hi, my name is Art Goldack from University in Wuppertal. And actually, at the end of the session, we can have a look at the end of the paper production. And actually, I have now several PhD students which are relying on publishing because of their PhD defense. And there is always a problem with finalizing the papers or putting it into the production. So we have one paper which is now 4 months ready to be published. No DOI is registered, and the student is waiting for doing his PhD defense. And sometimes it appears that several journals are overfed with papers, the pipeline is full, and then actually I just want the editors to say honestly, we cannot accept more papers. This happens to a very famous journal, and I don't want to name it, but actually we are waiting now for several months for this DOI. And this is a personal problem for the students because they get not funding anymore.
Who would like to come in?
I must say from my experience, when a paper is accepted, then it's put in the final layout by the publisher. This takes only 1 week, I think. And I think maximum 2 weeks, it's published online. But then I often get the question, especially for PhD students, when it's just published online, that doesn't count as such. It should be in an issue, and it should have page numbers like it appears in the issue. So it's not just official to have it published online. You want really to see it published in an issue. Some universities do that, others not, but regularly I receive demands in this way.
So unfortunately,
your journal, actually I'm not talking about Wiley, I'm talking about another publisher. And in Wiley it's really a good way, because you are right, we are waiting only a few weeks and then everything is online. But the problem is not that they are waiting for the paper, they are waiting for the DOI registration. And this is an publisher which is two steps to the left from your point. It's a ASCE, to say it honestly. And this is a problem, actually.
I apologize, but maybe we need to continue the discussion later on when we have a coffee break, because we are run out of time. So first of all, I would like to thank the audience for their participation. I had prepared some questions and I didn't use any of them. So thank you very much. And also I would like to extend our gratitude to all the editors that were here today sharing their thoughts, sharing also giving advices, and also with all the transparency of this work, no, that is really helpful for us, because we are always publishing the results of our research. So we would like to thank you with a sweet detail from Girona. 1 second. Okay, so thank you very much, and we are going to move on to the next session. So thank you, and we will continue the discussion later on.